who will introduce our speaker for today's meeting.
Thank you, Brian Mann, from an alcoholic. In terms of service message, this will be a lot of silver necklace with a nest with pearl eggs on a black string. If you found it, if you could bring it up here after the meeting and we can get it back to it right below there, I appreciate it. Again, I have to say, as this morning's speaker, today was the first time I've met Carolyn, but I have to let you know just a little bit about how she impacted me. As a women's conference, we meet at least once a month, and we have lots and lots of business, and we all want to talk and share a lot. But we can't do that. We've got to get down to the business. And we, at the end, sit around and we hold hands, and we're supposed to say 3 to 4 words about how we feel. That's it. 3 to 4 words. And it's tough sometimes, I'm telling you. Well, I had women come over to my house, and we were listening to quite a few women's speakers tapes, and when we listened to Carol Ann, I have to tell you, at first, there was a drop of nothing. She couldn't hear anything. And then the words that came to my mind was actually the name of this conference, Sunlight of the Spirit. That's the way I thought about the speaker. So it's my pleasure to introduce you to Carol E. from San Jose.
Hi everyone, my name is Carol Ann and I'm an alcoholic. And I want to welcome all of you on your journey to wholeness, because that's what recovery has been for me, is a journey to wholeness. And I really do believe that I suffer from a disease of mind, spirit, and my emotions, and my physical allergy to alcohol. And so when I talk about my recovery, what I talk about, and I try to address what I've had to do over the years in order to maintain my sobriety. My sobriety date is September 28, 1981. I celebrated 16 years of continuous sobriety. And one of the things that I will tell you that I have learned in being here as long as I have is to keep an open mind about your recovery. And one of the greatest gifts that I have received from my higher power is an open mind. And what I have learned over the years is to have balance in my life. And so I try to talk about balance in my life and some of the things that had to change and some of the things that had to go away, and I had to refocus over the years in my sobriety. You know, I had an old friend probably used to say, AA is the only place you can come in, look like hell, smell like hell, act like hell, so we're going to steal everything they got and they say, shut up, sit down, and listen. Give that person a book. Where? And then a month later, that same person is saying, sit down, shut up, and listen. Give that person a book. It's just that simple. One drunk helping another drunk, and we stay sober one day at a time. And one of the things that I've learned in being here is that none of us have those establishments in the town main, or else we wouldn't be here. So if you're looking to me for profound wisdom, well, I don't know if I can handle that one, but I will tell you about my experience, strength, and hope, because that's what they told me I needed to do when I got here, that I needed to share my experience, strength, and hope with you. And I hope that in doing so, that I touch at least one person today, because that is my primary purpose for standing before you. And I've given it to God, and I try to keep my ego out of it, and I try to be as honest as I can. And I hope that in doing so that I touch one person today. And I want to tell you that if you are sitting here today, you are advancing, you are progressing, you are moving forward in your life. You may not feel that if you're new, but I'm here to tell you the fact that you're acknowledging that you have a problem and that it is something that you need help with is truly part of our recovery process. And so in order to share what it was like for me, I need to go a little bit back into my childhood. Now I want you to know that I no longer blame anyone, anything, my childhood, my parents, my alcoholism. I'm an alcoholic because I drink too much. I'm an alcoholic because when I drink, I make a complete fool out of myself. I'm an alcoholic that when I drink, I don't remember anything, not even my own name. So, when I walked into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous 16 years ago, actually I came in a couple years before I got sober and stayed sober, I was a very damaged person, emotionally and mentally, as well as physically. And so part of my recovery was having to look at all aspects of my background and understand my emotional problems, some of my behaviors, some of the patterns that I wanted to let go of because I no longer wanted to engage in self-destructive, self-defeating behavior. And I was still doing it long after I got sober. When I was a child, I grew up in a dysfunctional family, and we use that word a lot. All I can tell you is that my first recollections of my childhood were of violence and fear and a lot of anger. My father abused my mother, and my mother abused my father. It was a very equal opportunity household. And my father would beat up my mother, and my mother would chase him down the hall with a hot iron, burning him, and tear up his underwear, and throw his books that he was studying high school with out in the front yard. And there was always all kinds of things. And I remember that at that point in my life, I learned to detach, disassociate, and anesthetize myself in my head from my life experiences. Because it was too painful. It was too scary. And to see my mother getting beaten by my father was a very scary thing. And to see my mother, who was a rager, was a very scary thing. And so I began at a very early age to check out and disassociate and leave the scene. And I continued to do that long into my recovery. When I was 15 years old, I shared this because it helps. It may help somebody, but it also helps to understand some of my background. At 15 years of age, I was babysitting some children, and during the course of me taking care of these children, there was one little boy, one little girl. I was 15 years old. I was a child myself. And during the course of me taking care of them, the house started on fire. The little boy was trapped in the garage with a neighbor's boy. And I remember that I smelled the smoke and I ran outside and I heard these little kids, these two little boys screaming my name, begging, pleading, asking me to save them. And I remember that I was terrified and I was traumatized, and I remember that I heard them screaming and begging for me to help them, but I couldn't help them. And I remember I picked up a garden hose and I ran into that garage and I tried to put out the horrendous fire with this garden hose to no avail. And these kids ended up burning to death. And as a result of that, I began a life of self-destructive, self-defeating behavior. And for most of my adult life, I felt tremendous shame, tremendous guilt, and tremendous remorse for the death of those children. I always felt responsible for the death of those children. And you see, I never got help for it. Back then, your parents didn't get you help. They just figured it would go away and everything would be fine, and I never got any help for it. So what I did, being an alcoholic from the start anyway, because I do believe that I was groomed for this disease as a result of some of the things that happened to me as a child. And so what I did is I jumped into a bottle of alcohol, and for the first time I felt relief. And that feeling of impending doom that used to hang over my head began to disappear. And I could act stupid, and I could act funny, and I could be sexy, and I could be crazy. And I had a lot of fun with alcohol. But you see, alcohol turned on me and it became my enemy. It was no longer my friend. And my life began to get progressively worse. Now, I'm the kind of woman who used to go out, fall down flights of stairs, pass out in public restaurants, end up in jail. I was always the one everybody knew was around. I was jumping in face. I was always inappropriate. Like they said, I was rude, crude, and socially unacceptable when I drank. I would go to a tea party and tell big jokes. So it was always inappropriate, and then I'd repeatedly repeat the punchline. And then everybody would go on and cheer for skeptical of himself. And the thing that was so baffling is that I used to always wonder why I could drink less than other people, and I was always the one that got so damn drunk. How come I'm always the one that has to be carried out of the place? You know, how come I'm the one that always gets these people that calls me the day after I go on a bender and tells me what I acted like, what I looked like, including my facial expressions at the time? I hated those phone calls. Oh, you didn't act too bad. Your mouth was hanging open, your eyes were rolled back, your legs just crawled apart, but you were okay. And I think they really got some kind of sick satisfaction out of kept calling me and telling me about everything that you did. And I used to get those calls all the time. So I knew that I had a problem with alcohol. But I really did not have an alcoholic. You see, I was one of those alcoholics who was a periodic alcoholic. I didn't drink every day. But when I did drink, I couldn't guarantee my behavior. And I would drink, and I would drink, and I would drink to a point of oblivion. And I hurt myself. And I got myself in a lot of trouble. Because, you see, I never honored myself. I never respected myself. I never loved myself. Until I came into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous and began my beautiful journey of recovery through the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. And today, if I have anyone in my life, I ask Carol Ann, I have three questions. If by having this person in my life, will I be loving myself? Will I be honoring myself? Will I be respecting myself? And if I say no to any of those things, then you know what? I have no business being involved with this person. And that took me most of my recovery to learn that one. And that's why I call it my journey to wholeness. Because today I do honor myself. And part of honoring myself is staying sober one day at a time. Well, I began my alcoholic life, and I will also tell you that I'm an addict. I took diet pills for 9 years, and in 9 years I lost 5 pounds. That this disease is coming, that's it, and we just transfer one addiction to another until we feel whole inside, until we feel that emptiness, that void inside of ourselves, that spiritual void. And so I would get drunk and I would take my diet pills so I could drink more and lost 5 pounds in 9 years. And I was always hurt to myself. Always. I would go buy a beautiful dress, go out to a nightclub, and end up getting bombed, hit my face against the table, blood drips down the front of the dress, bouncer takes me out of the bar and puts me in my car. I remember waking up, my car was parked on my driveway, on my front lawn, right in front of my door. And I just turned the key on and went to work. Nothing wrong with that. I'm okay. I feel sorry for my coworkers. They probably smell all the booze oozing out of every pore. So, yes, we do practice insane behavior. But I want to show you what happened to me that helped me to hit my bottom. I was dating this real lunatic from Fireball, California, I went across the Boston place. You blink and you don't it. And you know, they say you seek loyal companionship. We do. You know, on a good day, when he was in charge of the school medical capacity, the conversation consisted of, yeah, man, like, yeah, man, like, yeah, man. But you see, he drank the way I did. He drank like I did. He never told me to act right. Because everybody was always telling me to act right. Well, you learn how to act right, Carolyn. And I was always looking for that magic formula to learn how to act right. And it wasn't until I came here and found new people that I learned how to act right. I was always trying to act right. today as he left the room, especially if he was drinking. And he had this Lourdes towel with these girls' pictures engraved on the window. He was my nice and shiny Lourdes towel. And I was his Latina Marilyn Monroe. And on his chest, he had a tattoo of the Virgin Mary. And on the back, he had the tattoo of Jesus Christ. I always felt guilty when we had sex. Anyway, we used to go out and get drunk and just act stupid and babble like it is. And one day we went to this party. It was Cinco de Mayo. I hate that holiday to this day because he decided I was getting too independent. It was Mexican Independence Day. And he decided I was getting a little too independent. And we had been drinking tequila shots all day. We've been smoking dope, snorting coke, and dropping dark pills. And I don't know if you know this, but if you do that long enough, you get a buzz. And so... so anyway, we were at this party, and we were both bombed out of our minds, and he was in a blackout, and I was in a blackout. And... he was very violent when he drank. And he began to beat me up out in the front lawn of this party. There was a party going on inside, and I was being beat up on the outside of this party in the front lawn. And I will tell you, this is the kind of people that I associated with before I came here. Not one person lifted a finger to help me. Not one man, not one woman. And what happened is that the neighbors heard screaming and they saw what was going on the outside of the party and they called the police. And by the time the police came, he had beat me up so bad I was knocked unconscious. He had ripped off my blouse. I was laying in the lawn with no top on, exposed to the world, and he had knocked out my front teeth. I ended up in the hospital the following morning. I was 27 years old, and I woke up in the hospital, and I looked around, I looked in the mirror, and I saw myself. Now, this is a woman who had a lot of pride, who prided herself on being a lady when she was sober. I had been to modeling school, I worked for a prestigious college, I used to go to work every day in my business suit with my briefcase, and here I was in this hospital with my front teeth gone, totally beaten, black eyes, big lump on my head, my clothes were rags, and I looked in the mirror and I thought, my God, what is happening to me? How could this have happened to me? And I began to recall all the times when I had embarrassed myself, and I began to remember all the times when I had harmed myself, when I had hurt myself, when I hurt other people, when I embarrassed myself, when I fell down flights of stairs, passed out in public restaurants, ended up in jail, wrecked cars. I've been in 5 car wrecks. I shouldn't be here. If I take that back, I should, because that's what I needed to do in order to be here with you today, so that I could share my experience and tell you that's not the way to live. So I looked in the mirror and I thought, and I did my first real inventory of my life. And I thought, my God, what's going on? And I realized that the problem was him. Before I came here, I never honored myself, I never loved myself, I never respected myself. And so I took him, being the plain and codependent that I am, to an AA meeting. And he got up and introduced himself as a newcomer, and I thought, right on, you newcomer. And I got up and introduced myself as a visitor. And here I am doing your inventory, looking around saying, Jesus Christ, if I look like that, I'd start drinking too. And here I am with no teeth, doing your inventory. Okay? I was real well back then. And so, unfortunately, the topic was God at this meeting, and I practically tripped over chairs running out of the place. I don't want to hear about God. What does God have to do with this idiot getting sober? So we left the meeting, and we went down to the local bar, and we proceeded to get drunk one more time. And we laughed at you people, and we thought you were all a bunch of losers. And the loser was me. But see, those are my attitudes that I have when I went to an AA meeting. You guys are all a bunch of losers. And now my attitudes are so different. Because you speak to Brian as a gift. And it's a privilege to be here. And the longer that I'm sober, the more I realize it's a gift and a privilege to be here. And so he continued to make my life miserable. He used to come over to my house and drunker than a skunk at 2 in the morning and swing and sing sweet nothings like you tramp and you pig, all his terms of endearment. And all the neighbors knew who we are. And I remember one time he ripped the tire off my car and he went running down the street and my car fell on the grass floor. Another time our brother-in-law beat him up with a vacuum cleaner hose. As another time he chased me down the street with a knife. It was a very normal alcoholic relationship. But it was what needed to happen, and I thank him for that now, because that's what brought me to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. My last drug was by far not my worst. I went to a wedding, and I proceeded to get bombed out of my mind and tell everybody dirty jokes and refuse to repeat the punchline, and drowned myself in the champagne fountain. Got up and sang with the mariachis, and I can't sing with the band. And then by the end of the evening, I was running around pulling my dress up to the horror of my whole family. And the following day, I got that phone call. You know what drag is like? You know what your faithful friends are like? You know what you did? And it was my mother, and she was crying. And she was saying, Mija, there is something wrong with you. You need help. Why don't you go to the AAA place? So the following day I went to that AAA place. And I remember that I walked in and I heard somebody talking about setting their mattress on fire with them on it. And I thought, oh, I've never done that. God looking for the differences rather than the similarities. And somebody else talked about crapping in their pants. Well, man, I've never done that. I've urinated a few times, but I've never crapped in pants. Totally lost the control when I drink, believe me. So, I jumped into the program with both feet and I ran around acting like a flying nun. I was insane to all you people. I went from step one to step 12. The only problem was that I was still smoking dope, snorting coke, and dropping back pills, so I wasn't drinking. And so I get that phone call to do a 12-step call right out of my mind. Yeah, I'll go. What are you going to do? And the way that I found out that I couldn't smoke dope, snort coke, and drop diesel, because back then they didn't talk about drugs in AA meetings. In fact, you were asked to leave. Okay? So I didn't hear a lot of that information. All I knew that I wasn't supposed to drink. And as long as I didn't drink, you know what? I was sober. And the way I found out that I couldn't do these recreational drugs was I went to an AA party. And I have just gotten back from Maui. And I have scored half a pound of really good girl. Not to share it with other people.
Well, thank you for sharing.
if anybody's thinking of I got a pussy cat, okay, because that's really where I am. Or they'll come up to me and they'll say, you know, you've really softened up over the years. And I'll go, no, you've softened up because you recognize it in me. We are so brutal with our honesty sometimes. But until you walk in someone else's moccasins, we don't have a right to tell people what they're doing or not doing according to the way we think they should live. And as a sponsor, I really had to find that out because, see, my obligation as a sponsor is to merely keep to help people process through the recovery process of the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm not here to run their life, either marriage counselor, tell them that they can't go to psychiatrists or doctors. Because I'm not a doctor, I'm not a psychiatrist. I don't know what they need. And what I have learned over the years is that I don't want to become so self-righteous in recovery that I have to deny anybody the right to do whatever they need to stay alive and recover. And be happy and be good. Because I'm so when I have 15 years of sobriety, I'll tell you, I was a stressed out basket case. I was driving to work one day, my heart was palpitating, I was getting chest pain, I was sobbing in my car, I wasn't able to sleep, I hadn't slept the whole night for 2 years. I was fatigued every day, I dragged myself out of my bed. And I went to the doctor after 15 years of sobriety and described my symptoms to this person. And I started to relate some of the stress that I had dealt with in my life. And they said, Jesus Christ, mother, you can't get up. You have maxed out your body. You have been living with depression. You have every single symptom of depression that I've ever seen. I said, but I don't feel suicidal. I don't want to kill myself. I don't feel like jumping off a bridge. And they suggested that I get on medication. And you're looking at a person who for 15 years never needed to be on medication. I didn't need any medication, but I never told somebody that they didn't need medication, because I'm not their doctor. And they put me on medication, and I'll tell you something, I feel normal. It doesn't matter my feelings. It doesn't alter my mind. I feel normal. And that's what I needed. So I did step one, and I admit I was powerless over alcohol and that my life was unmanageable. I was definitely powerless over alcohol. When I drank, I fell down flights of stairs, I passed out in public restaurants, I woke up with memories of scared bulls out of a meat truck. Now I am. My life is unmanageable. But by surrendering, I surrendered to win because you see, when I admitted that I was powerless over alcohol, I was empowered. And when I talk about power, what I'm talking about is the power inside of you that will set you free from the disease of addiction. And when I talk about power, that power within you that resides in your own heart that will help you to achieve your goals and your aspirations and all the things that you want for yourself, you can have it if you're only willing to work for it. Nobody's going to do it for you. You've got to take the action, but go for your dreams. Because any dreams that you have, the moment you start taking action towards it, can become a reality. And see, by surrendering the alcoholic way of life, I began to tap into the power within myself, and I was empowered. And then I came to believe that a power greater than myself would restore me to sanity. However intellectual I may have been in other ways, when it came to alcohol, I was truly insane, wasn't I? How many of you went to a party and argued with your lover, spouse, boyfriend, that you could drive better drunk? How many of you went to a party in January and came home in April? How many of you woke up without generally challenged and not going to be the same. And you do it one more time. And see, when you have passed enough lines, if you ever did, from social drinking to alcoholic drinking, then you will understand the insanity that we talk about here. You will know just as your toenail that feeling of insanity that we talk about here. And then I made a decision to turn my life and my will over to the care of God as I understand God. And every time I ask God for help, God's answer is always yes, yes, yes. So if you're new or if you're old, put your hand in your higher power's hand. And together you can do what you could never do alone. And so I made a decision without reservation, without delay, to turn my life and my will over to the care of God. And my life was transformed. And I am no longer the same person. I don't act the same, I don't feel the same, I don't do the same things that I used to do. I no longer engage in self-destructive, self-defeating behavior. And it was from a power greater than myself that I choose to call God, but that was relief for me. And then I made a searching and thorough moral inventory of my life. As I mentioned before, you're looking at a woman who was a very damaged person when she got here. I had a lot of emotional and mental problems when I came into the room, and I didn't even know. I figured if I just stopped drinking, I would be wonderful. Well, fool me, because I wasn't. And I put down on paper all the things that I had done to harm myself and harm other people, because that's what my sponsor told me to do. And I looked at the patterns, and I looked at all the times when I had been selfish and self-centered, and I had hurt myself and other people, and all the times I had ripped people off, lied to them, used sex to manipulate, done all sorts of things that were harmful to myself and others. And all the resentments that I came in here with. And I put it down on paper, and I shared it with my sponsor, and I did step five, and I said to God, to myself, as a human being, the exact nature of my wrong. And this is where I did the dog battle backwards. I know what my problems are. God knows what my problems are. But how about the telling me is you what my problems are? What it teaches us is humility. When I can look at myself in the mirror, I bow my eyeball and say, I love you with all your warts and all your zips and all your styles and all your funky behaviors. And I still love you. Because you're a child of God, and I honor that child of God today. And so I shared my inventory with my sponsor. And if you haven't shared your inventory with your sponsor, I recommend that you do so. And then I did step six, and I was entirely ready to have God remove these defects of character. And guess what? They didn't all go away. As much as I wanted them to, they just would not go away. And you see, that's when I needed to get outside help. And I did get outside help, and it saved my life. And what I tell the women that I sponsor is, you work the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, you read the big book, you work with others, you go to meetings, you get involved in service, and if you get to a point where you need additional help, I applaud you for it, because I want you to be happy. I want you to be sober. I want you to have it all. So you do what you need to do, because I did what I needed to do. And then I got into step seven. Humbly asked God to remove my shortcomings. Step 8, made a list of all persons that I harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. And I wrote down all the people that I harmed, my creditors, my friends, my family, my boyfriend, my landlord, my employer, anybody that I had used or ripped off or hurt in any way, I put down on the list, and I put myself on that list too. And then I did step 9. and I mean to recommend someone to do so would injure them or others, and I want to these people. And I said, I'm truly sorry for any harm that I've caused you. And I'll tell you what step 8 and 9 has done for me. Step 8 and 9 has been one of the most powerful lessons in self-forgiveness. Because forgiveness is very powerful. And if you're still holding resentment towards somebody, I will tell you that forgiveness is for you, not for them. Because as long as you hold on to that resentment, you are subject to connection to them. And the thing that I also learned is that everybody deserves a passage through my mind. Because if not, I was the one that suffered. So then I did step 10, continue to take first from the shore when I'm all along to do it. And I do sometimes and I don't some other times. I'll be honest with you that sometimes I can admit when I'm wrong right away, and sometimes I can't. It takes me a little while because that pride gets in the way, or that self-justification gets in the way, or that victim martyr gets in the way. And then I think about it, and then I gotta take responsibility for my life today, because that's what recovery is about, is taking responsibility for my life today. Nobody can do anything to me. It's my choices that I make that create my life. It's my thoughts that I have in my mind that create my life. You know, one of the things that I learned about the way that I thought and why I had to change my thinking, it was so important for me to change my thinking. When I first got sober, I was one of the most negative people you could ever run across. And I didn't even know it. And I will tell you that each and every one of you, every day, has about 55,000 thoughts that go through your mind. Now, if out of those 55,000 thoughts that go through your mind, most of it's about resentment, self-hatred, envy, jealousy, anger. What's your life going to be like? What's your world going to be like? Trying to change my thinking to faith, to prosperity, to love, to forgiveness. And then my life and my world started to reflect that. Because it starts with the mind and the way that we think. You take away the training and build up the mind. And if you're still running around doing a chakra on somebody's head with your high heels on, there's something wrong. I'll tell you, I always feel like I'm cursed to shit when I'm living alone, self-employed, and not in a relationship. But if any of these things change, it's like somebody threw miracles all over my dirt to Jesus. Damn, I can still be over here, no. Jesus. It'll trip Carolina. Chill out, back off. Take a chill pill. So, I have to look at my actions all the time, because then I walk around with this horrible emotional hangover that don't feel real good. Then I did step 11, where I start with prayer and meditation to improve my conscious contact with my higher power of my understanding. Pray knowing for knowledge of the rule for me and the power to carry that out. When I pray, I align myself with the consciousness of my higher power. The more I pray, the more I stay in a state of grace. The more I stay in the spirit. When I pray, my thoughts are with my higher power. I'm not thinking of my fish and my fish bowl. I'm thinking of my higher power. So if you haven't started to do the discipline, the practice of prayer, I encourage you to do so. Because it will be your connection to your higher power. Meditation. I've been meditating for probably 18 years. I started meditating before I even got sober. Can you imagine trying to meditate while you're out of your mind? Mind you still? I don't think so. had the privilege, because of having an open mind and being willing to experience different things, to meet two gurus in India, to go on a crusade with Billy Graham, to go to ashrams and meditate, to meditate in the Appalachian Mountains for days. And I'll tell you, every single experience was a wonderful experience. Because there will be opportunities and tools that are put in your life for a reason. And to avail yourself of it. Because your spiritual path might have stopped. And you see, there is a mystery to meditation. Be still enough. And see, alcoholics and addicts are so used to going outside of themselves to get good. If I only had that car, I'd be fine. If I only had that new dress, I'd be okay. If I only had that good little guy, I'd really be doing well. And they never go within. They look at the essence of who they really are, the core of their being, the heart, the soul. The heart, the soul, the spirit that we all have within us. I like to call it love. I like to call it God. And when you tap into that power, then you're empowered. And one of the ways to tap into that power is to do prayer and meditation. And it is a discipline. If you exercise once a month, what good is that going to do you? You'll still have a little hanger on your butt. I know that I've got one. But I do pray and meditate, and it keeps me sane. It keeps me sane. Because I can get real fear-driven. I can get real scared. I can feel really overwhelmed. I can't do this. This is too much. And then I tap into the power, and I feel okay again. Because I know that no matter how I feel, no matter what's going on in my life, I'm going to be okay. And I know that today, and I feel it. And then I get to that call, and having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, I try to carry the message to other alcoholics and to practice these principles in all my affairs. Having had a spiritual awakening, what does that mean? It means we wake up. For me, it meant wake up. So we wake up to that spiritual part of ourselves, that soul within us. And once we wake up to that power, we turn around and we give it away to other people because we recognize the gift that we've received. And we want to give it to you because we want you to get well and we want you to be happy just like we are. And I try to practice these principles in all my affairs. I'm not perfect. I don't ever think I will be. They say there are no saints. And I certainly am no saint. But I certainly am better than I used to be. I had the privilege of going to two world conventions. The first one was in Seattle, the second one was in San Diego. And I will tell you that it was one of the greatest experiences that I've ever had in both occasions. And I was registering for the conference, and I remember looking around and saying, my God, look at all these people that are smiling, that are laughing, that are happy, that are registering for this conference. There was like 85,000 people there. And I thought about all those people who would have died, who would have been incarcerated, who would have ended up in some sort of horrible problem if they hadn't found Alcoholics Anonymous and got sober. And then I thought about all the children who no longer had to be protected from their protectors, who didn't have to go to child protection services anymore because of a drunken mother or father. And all the healing that was going on because of Al-Anon and family structures and making these families healthy for the first time and giving them tools, the 12 steps that they could use to transform their families. And I thought about all the babies that didn't have to be born with fetal alcohol syndrome. And when I think about things like that, I cannot even begin to describe to you how you are involved in one of the most spiritual movement of the 20th century. It is one of the greatest programs for the arrest of alcoholism and changing lives that I know of today. What my life's like today? Well, it's better than it used to be. I don't pass on public restrooms, I don't fall on the dirt, I don't urinate all over myself. I've had a business that I started 10 years ago, and in 2 years, I started with $100, and in 2 years I made over $100,000. I have a family monetary business, which is called Liquors in Europe from Danville, California. I also teach 2 nights a week at the National Traffic and Safety Institute. I teach alcohol and drug diversion classes. And you're looking at a woman who got in 5 car wrecks before I got sober. And now I teach alcohol and drug awareness classes to drug drivers. You're looking at a woman who walked in with her front teeth missing. I just recently had all this dental work. It took a whole year to fix my teeth. About $7,000 later, I've got a beautiful grill. And I've been smiling in my rearview mirror this time, boy. I'm going to be checking out these teeth. Yeah, I like them. The greatest gift I received is my sobriety, of course, because I've been able to do all these things sober. I have a radio show for 3 years on health and beauty, and you're looking at somebody that came in and beaten her. And when I was 40 years old, I gave birth to my first child. Single mom, and I will say that it's the hardest job I've ever had. It has definitely made me want to be part of the Pascal finger paint on my other one. I was one of those mothers who said I'd never spank my kids. I lied. I have a beautiful little boy. His name is Adam, and he truly is my joy. I love him so much. I feel so blessed to have him, and I'll tell you, when he was born, I was the greatest, I was the happiest Mexican in captivity. And I had a completely healthy birth. So if you're 40 years old thinking you can't have a kid, I'm going to tell you you can. And you can do it alone if you have to. It's not preferred, but you can. Sometimes it's preferred, but for me it wasn't preferred. It just turned out that way. You know, life sometimes isn't the way you want it to be. So my life is good. I sponsor a lot of people. I've had the privilege of being on the board of directors for all the recovery homes in Santa Clara County for quite some time. My sponsor and I have had the privilege of working on the core committee for the International World Women's World AA Conference, and it's going to be held in San Jose next year. So I hope I see all of you there, because it's going to be awesome. You know, I just can't tell you how grateful I am and how much I appreciate the fact that somebody sat down with me one day and told me what it was like and what happened and what it's like now. You see, the honor that used to shield my heart is no longer there. When I look into my heart and when I look into my soul, I feel peace today. I want to thank you, thank you, thank you so much for all the gifts of my life. Because without you, I wouldn't be here. And I hope, like I said in the beginning, that I've touched at least one person today. Because each and every one of us has the ability, has the privilege, has the opportunity to touch literally thousands of people's lives before it's all over. Because only you can get through to another alcoholic.
So you stay here and you get the gift of touching literally thousands of people's lives before it's all over, because a person like me has been able to do that in my own way. And I'm grateful that I have had the privilege of being asked by the committee to be here. And I hope that if anybody has any questions about what is wrong with them, that they reach out their hand and ask for help, that you will find that there are literally thousands of people who would be willing to help you if you would only open your mouth and ask for it. Thank you very much for coming.
The book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask God in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man or woman who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with God is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to God and to your fellows and fellow women. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you tread the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then. Okay, and I'd like now to introduce, to close this year's conference, Marianne Oh, who is our co-chair of the 4th Marin County Women's Conference. She will lead us in a prayer of her choice.
Please join me. Just stand if you join me. Lynn, please come up here.
Ah! Yeah.